Welcome to All the Bits, a fake radio show about board games, the community, and all the lovely, lovely bits. All the Bits is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network and is sponsored by Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Sean and Michelle.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 76.
I lied, I wasn't quite ready, but I can keep going. Here we go. Is this episode 6? We'll talk about the games The Lost Ruins of Arnak, Micro Macro, Crime City, The Quest Kids, and Maglev Metro. I think I said that one right. And we'll discuss the BGG thread, Modern Board Game Expectations. Mm. And we'll get up to all of our usual antics of asking pointless questions, guessing games, and drooling over bits.
Oh, the bits.
All the bits. So I almost, when I went to do my little drool, I was going to grab my cup of water. I accidentally grabbed, like, I'm sitting where I do my painting, and I grabbed my cup of old paint water.
Oh.
And I almost drank that.
So, I'm sure every painter out there has done that at least once. Oh. Just like every board gamer has grabbed, actually, I've never done this, but I've heard of many people who, like, have a bag of chips or a bowl of chips or candy and a bowl of bits. And they,
what,
like,
really?
Go. Yeah, I've heard a few people do that. They're just like, because you're not, you know, you just mindlessly grab and then you have a meeple in your mouth.
Ooh, that might also be the name of our episode. Have a meeple in your mouth. That's what she said. Meeple in your mouth. Okay.
All right. So I have a question for you.
Oh, what's your question?
That's our sound for Ask Me Anything, wherein we ask each other useless questions about this beautiful hobby. Meeple mouth filled. Beautiful hobby.
Oh my gosh. Okay. If you were to eat any.
Okay. So I have a scenario for you. So I'd like to introduce you to Maria. She does not like conversing. Sorry?
I said, how you doing, Maria?
How you doing?
How you doing?
Where you at? All right. So Maria, unfortunately, does not like conversing with people and she prefers to stay home. Her boyfriend has dragged her over to your house, and there's about five of you. Not about. There are five of you. Your primary goal is to find a game for Maria, since everyone else is pretty open to anything. What game would you pull off your shelf for Maria?
She doesn't like conversing.
Yes, she prefers to stay home, so I'm guessing she's, like, not a people person and likes, you know, chill, quiet type of stuff.
Telestrations.
Yeah? Why?
Well, because, well, A, technically you don't have to do any talking. You don't have to do any conversing because you're really just drawing and writing. But it's a good icebreaker, and it'll, you know, if she's not opposed to humor, it might work well. And, yeah, so telestrations.
Good pick. All right, yeah. Cool.
Codenames would be another, could be another good one as well.
Which one?
Codenames. I mean, she would have to converse a little bit, and there's a little bit more interaction with codenames. But, you know, you can work, you can kind of get away without talking a ton.
It's true.
All right. I have a question for you.
No.
I'm debating whether I'm going to change it now based on that mouthful of a meeple thing. Because initially I had a question for you, but now I kind of want to know if you could eat any board game bit, what would it be? And I'm going to say not Azul. That's getting thrown out the door because everyone was like, oh, it's like Starburst, and they look just like Starburst or whatever. So the most appetizing board game bit that you would just want to start munching down on?
I think the berries from Everdell, because they just look, they look so cute and they're so squishy.
Everdell.
I would eat those for sure. They're so cute. Have you played that game?
I still have not played Everdell, no.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
It's actually a pretty good game.
I would assume everything I've heard about Everdell that I would love it. So
I just purchased, finally, I was trying to avoid the expansions.
I see them now. They kind of look like... They're super cute. Oh, no, I guess they look like... I was going to say, they kind of look like Skittles, but...
They're squishy, though. They're actually...
Are they squishy?
Yeah, they're squishy. They're pretty great. But yeah, I was saying I bought Belfair because my biggest issue with a game is that you need, like, synergy between these events and the cards, and sometimes you can, like, go through the whole deck and... Well, not through the whole deck, but it becomes a luck fest, and I hated that about the game, but I liked the game itself. And Belfair fixes it, so I was like, fine, I'll buy it. So I did. And it was cool. it was momentous. No, it wasn't. I did play with it, and I did much prefer it. It's like, it just has generic goals, like have four unique characters or critters instead of have this specific card and this specific card.
That sounds so basic.
So basic. I don't actually even know what that means. I saw a video today of people.
What is it? Pumpkin spice latte.
Oh. Let's see. Basic slang. What dictionary? I'm doing it. I saw a video today about like Gen Z throwing all their words out, and I was like, what is that? Okay, let's see. Oh, it's Airhead. Oh, women who are perceived to prefer mainstream products. Oh, yeah, so your latte was very good. Okay, so you always make fun of me for not being, like, mainstream, and now you're calling me basic.
No, I'm super basic.
Yeah, you are.
I know.
I'm glad you recognize, although you're not a woman, so, and apparently only women can be basic. Whatever.
Well, then, let's just, let's, I guess, some games here.
Okay.
I could not think of a segue.
I liked it.
Bad one.
It was very clear.
Just let's get on to this. Do, So this is our guess the game bit, wherein we give each other vague, then specific, then super obvious clues from the Board Game Geek to guess a game and ask that you guess along at home.
I have a bad feeling about this tonight, Sean.
Do you? Okay, let me do mine first, because I'm assuming yours will be a lot more amusing as I fumble along.
Okay.
Really? Oh my, it's always funny that when I look at some of the games and then I see some of the stats or whatever on it, I'm like, holy crap, I did not realize. Okay, here we go. This game came out in 2019. It currently has an 8.2. on BGG, and is ranked 54th overall. It plays 1 to 4 players in 60 to 120 minutes. Oh, I'm calling BS on that. And has a weight of 4.03.
Interesting. Black Angel?
No. You're definitely around the right time.
Is it Gaia Project?
No.
Cooper Island?
No.
Maracaibo?
No.
I don't think Maracaibo is that heavy. Those are all my guesses.
I'm not going to give you the designer or publisher, because then I do think you'll know it right away. So let's make it a little bit harder for you. I'll give you the categories.
Trismegistus.
No. I usually won't give you a game from here that I cannot pronounce.
Okay.
So, category.
That's good to know.
Is economic, environmental, and industry/manufacturing.
Pipeline.
No.
No, you're wrong. I'm right. Sorry. It's not Brass, is it? Brass was pre-2019, right?
Yeah, it's before that, yeah.
I feel like maybe you're not reading Pipeline right. Do you know how to spell Pipeline, Sean?
Pipeline's not bad, is it?
It's. I think it might be. I don't know.
All right. Let me see some mechanisms.
Economic, you said, right?
Economic.
Oh, is it Barrage?
Yes.
Yay! Yeah, it is?
Yeah. I am shocked to see I was going to say Barrage.
At 54?
At 54.
I didn't know it was that popular either, yeah. Actually. Yeah, that's cool. By the way, pipeline is 3.86. So
not as heavy. Nailed
close-ish.
It. All right.
Have you played either of those, Pipeline or Barrage?
I play Barrage. Yes.
And?
I really like it. Yeah.
Yeah?
It's a little on the mean side for me. Slash not necessarily a game I would probably get to the table a ton. So just why I don't have it. But I do like it. I enjoyed it. Yeah, I played the demo of it at that Gen Con when Black Angel came out, and then I played one time, I think, the full game, and I did quite enjoy it. But yeah,
I usually play solo or two player, and I have a feeling I actually wouldn't like the game at its best player count because it is so mean.
Yes, it is very mean.
Yeah. All right, we do not have the same game
on okay, that's the game, good.
So that's not a good start. Good. Yeah. So you can cross that one off the yeah. list. Okay. All right, this came out in 2012.
Okay.
And has a current rating of 7.8 with 35,000 ratings.
Ooh.
It's in the top 100, I'll tell you that much, of BGG.
But not 50, whatever.
It is 50, whatever, actually.
Oh, it is in the 50s.
Yeah.
Okay.
Plays 1 to 4 players in 60 to 120 minutes and has a weight of 3.78. Oh, that Black actually surprises Angel. Me.
Pipeline. No.
No. 2012.
Not Terra Mystica.
Mm-mm.
Okay. I have no idea.
Its type is thematic. Some of these things in BGG, I'm like, okay. Like, what other types are there? Anyway. Okay. Categories? Do you want some?
Yeah.
All right. We got adventure, exploration.
Robin Crusoe?
It is.
Robinson Crusoe? Sorry.
Robinson Crusoe. Crusoe.
I will admit that I have the BGG webpage open. And under the hotness, I saw Robinson Crusoe
at 2012.
I will admit when I feel like I've been inadvertently helped. Now, in fairness, if you would look on there, you would have seen Barrage at 2019. Because apparently you're doing the same nonsense that I do and just...
Lazy! Well, I'm pretty sure the reason we both picked Everdell last episode was because it's on Kickstarter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh dear. And I still can't guess them. Okay, Robinson Crusoe, have you played it?
I have not, no.
No, okay. I have many times. But I haven't played it in many years. And I'm thinking of selling it, but I have
a new fancy one?
No, absolutely not. I'm very interested in the adventure book because I have like a lot of like print and play stuff, and it's like I tried to make it nice and neat. I have it like clipped and in envelopes and stuff, but I love the idea of having like a super clean book, but I think it's still very expensive. But minis and stuff, like, no, I'm good. I do have Fancy. That was actually one of the first games that I got Fancy Bits for, because I played this a ton when I first got into the hobby, and my husband bought me upgraded food bits, like little bananas and breads. Mm-hmm. Off Etsy.
Nice.
Yep. So I have like the old Z-Man version. I'm pretty old school.
It's pretty old. It's
part of my charm.
Hey, speaking of, no, pretty old isn't gonna fall into any of the games we have, I think. I don't think, but pew pew pew.
Speaking, wait. Speaking of charm, have you heard our best sound effect?
Pew!
Pew!
Pew! Pew! Pew! Pew!
Weak.
Pew,
pew, pew. Pew, 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 pew.
Why are we doing this?
This is the Pew Pew, our rapid laser-like reviews, where we explain games poorly and tell you what we think of them after a play or more, using our very, very superficial scale of... Sean, one. Take it away.
That would be a hard no.
No.
Remember that time I played a board game on the Switch that was about cannibalism, and we gave it a one.
Yay, we gave a one.
Hard no. Two, meh. Three, I mean, it's fine. Four, tis a gooder. And five, it's got the spark.
Sparkle, 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 sparkle.
And I will say, Michelle, spoiler alert, one of the games that I'm talking about today will have the spark.
Lost Runes of Arnak. I'm calling it.
All right, speaking of which, I guess I will do my first pew pew first.
Sounds good.
And that, the first game I will talk about is The Lost Runes of Arnak, which came out in 2020. Designed by Elwin, I'm not sure, and Min. Lots of different people did art, and I will not try and butcher their names, but I do enjoy the art in this game. It's fairly good, and published by Czech Games Edition. And I don't remember if I said it. It's 1 to 4 players, plays in 30 to 120 minutes, with a weight of 2.76. And the community says it's best played at 3. So, Lost Runes of Arnak is a deck building slash worker placement game where you are, it's Indiana Jones. I'm not going to try and explain anything in terms of the quote unquote theme of this game. You're Indiana Jones and you're going to find stuff and have to fight monsters and guardians and stuff. It's Indiana Jones. That's the theme of the game. But this is very similar to, and I talked about Dune Imperium a few episodes ago. These were the two games that tons of people were talking about at the end of last year. I have finally gone around to playing Lost Runes of Arnak, and I believe you've played it too as well, Michelle, right?
Yes, I have.
So what was I initially, when we initially had our thingamabob, our outline for the episode, I had only played it at 1 and 2 players. And I'll get into that as well, but I did get the chance last night because this actually just came into beta on Board Game Arena. So I actually got the chance to play this at the full complement of 4. Digitally, not the actual game, but I played the actual game with the bits and everything, 1 and 2 players. So this is, it's very similar to Dune Imperium, at least I find, with a couple differences. So what you're doing in this game is you're going to get a number of actions that you can do each turn. Basically, everyone plays until everyone passes. There are 5 rounds of this, and on your turn, you can do more or less 3 different main things. You can go to the market, I call it the market because deck building, to buy stuff using, there are 2 different types of cards you can buy there. You can buy artifacts, or you can buy items. And one costs money and one costs compasses. The other thing you can do is...
Obviously. No, I'm kidding.
And what's neat about this, as each round goes on, when you start the game, there are all the items in the market row are all, except one, are all going to be items. So they're all gold or gray or beige or whatever. And then there's one blue card, which is an artifact. And as the game goes on, there's more and more artifacts and less items. So that's a neat thing you have to prepare for as you go on. Then the other thing you can do, one of the other things you can do in this game is everyone has 2 dudes, and I don't think there's a way to get more dudes in this game. Everyone has 2 dudes that you can put on the map to go to a dig site. Dig site's where you're going to get resources. So resources, for the most part, there's money, which let you buy cards. There's now compasses, which let you buy artifacts as well as go to undiscovered dig sites. There are things like gems and tablets and arrowheads. I think those are the 5 things.
I think so, yeah.
And for the most part, those things come into play when you're doing research, which is the other thing you can do, which I'll get to in a second. But in terms of going to dig sites, you start out having 5 dig sites at the bottom. And when you go to a site, very similar to when you move your worker to a site, very soon, similar again to Dune Imperium, is that you move your worker to the site and you have to pay a certain movement cost. And there's a hierarchy in this game that goes, basically, some things are boots, which you can use. Some things are either a boat or a wagon that you might need to get there. And then the top one is an airplane. And it's kind of a hierarchy in that if you go somewhere where you need a boot, you can actually use an airplane or use one of the other things to go there. But you can't use a boot to go somewhere where you need an airplane.
Of course not. I mean, come on.
So you have to pay the movement cost, which is usually just, I think, one or two cards. So you have to, again, similar to Dune Imperium, you have to decide, hey, am I going to use this card for my movement purposes, or am I going to use this card to buy something at the end? You can go to, so you have that kind of discover dig sites, those five sites, but then you can also go, there are two rows or three rows. One has two rows, one has two levels, and the third one has one, where you pay three, you can move your dude there and you would pay three, the middle two rows, you pay three compasses, and you can go there and you flip over a card from a deck, and that's going to give you some, and these are, the resources are more plentiful than the discovered dig sites. But something else that happens is a guardian or monster comes dun, dun, with it. And you have to, well, you don't have to, but you, that gives you another action that you can fight off this monster. And it might be something like pay an arrowhead and a tablet or whatever. And you're able to fight, and if you fight him off, you get a little bonus as well as victory points for fighting him off. If you aren't able to fight him off or beat him, then you get a fear card. I think fear cards are kind of like curses in Dominion. I go back to Dominion for everything deck builder, but they kind of clog up your deck and give you negative one victory points. But they also have, they do have a movement, so you can use them for a boot. So they can use them. So you have those middle two rows. Then there's the top row, which you don't really get to until later in the game. They have, they cost six navigation or six compasses to be able to go there. And again, they're a little better, those resources, those spots. So, and once someone goes there, it's unlocked and you're able to go there for the rest of the game. The third thing you can do in the game is there's a research track that you can go up. Everyone has a book and a little magnifying glass thingamabob, and you always have to have your magnifying glass, I think, go up first ahead of the book, but you can move those up these tracks. You have to pay a cost for some combination of your resources, but there were victory points at the end of the game, as well as once you reach there, there's whoever gets there first might get a token that gives you something. And there's also a bonus that everyone gets for getting up to a certain level. That's kind of it in terms of things you can do. There are some tokens on top, too, if you can get your book all the way up there, I think. I really like this. Yeah. So you do this five times. The bits are really nice. I really like the bits. There's like the arrowheads are like little plastic resin type arrowheads. The tablets are nice and chunky and firm. The gems are kind of jewels. Everything seems super thick and nice in your hand. I really like the art. I find the art on both the Undiscovered Dig Site tiles and the Guardian tiles extremely gorgeous and really nice and have a really nice adventure-y feel to them. But the board's really nice too. It's double-sided. I have not played the Snake Temple.
Yeah, I haven't either.
I played the Bird one so far, but there's a difference between them, but I don't really know the difference offhand. But so yes, the bits are really nice. I really like this game. I really enjoy it. I don't think I like it quite as much as Dune Imperium.
You're so wrong.
Yeah, I know. No,
I'm kidding.
No, I think the one thing that Dune Imperium has that I really enjoy, even though it's not the type of gamer that I am, but I feel like it just adds that extra layer, is those cards, the jerk cards, which I'm forgetting the name of them. All the cards that you can play.
Intrigue? Are they intrigue or is that a different game?
No, intrigue cards, yeah. Well, that's also an expansion for Dominion, but yes. But the intrigue cards, yeah. That adds an extra layer. And also, in terms of the deck building in Dune Imperium, I do like that. The synergy between all the cards on there. I like the worker placement in this game. I'm just comparing the two because I feel like that's all anyone ever does, and I have no unique take at all. But I like the worker placement in this one. It's a lot more straightforward to me. It's a lot easier, like, to use the worker placement to kind of start you know, let's say if you want to work on the research track, there's lots of conversion. You have to like convert things a ton to move up that research track, right? Because it's in this game, resources aren't super plentiful. So you have to kind of, you know, constantly converting. So being able to move your dudes down, and only I like the fact you only have the two guys in it, so you really have to think about where you go. There are, I think, some artifacts that let you pull guys back, which are super helpful for doing stuff. But I think overall, I do like the deck building more, and I feel like both these games, I think the deck building is the important part in it, at least for me, with the new layer of the different layer of the of the worker placement. I like the deck building. I like that synergy that all the cards, that so many of the cards in Dune Imperium have, which is why I'm ahead of, I'm giving that one more, and which is why I gave Dune Imperium a 5, and this one is, tis a gooder. It's a 4.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's not even my spark, Michelle.
Oh, boy.
I will say, if I play this one more, I think it is going to go up, and this is one of those games I don't foresee myself for quite a while being able to play my copy of it with more than two players, because of, you know, hashtag pandemic life. But this game plays really, like, there are some glitches because it's in beta, but it plays really nice because the one thing I've heard a lot of people say about this game, and it does feel a little bit fiddly because there's so many different bits that you kind of have to, you know, move around and go towards, and all the different resources, and then the cards which are on the board. I love that the Board Game Arena one just handles everything for you, even though you don't get to play with the really nice bits. Mm-hmm. I am excited to play. I want to play this game at 3. The community says 3. 4 is, it did not sing to me at 1 or 2 at all. It was kind of like, it doesn't really feel like there's a competition for much. It doesn't feel like much is going on. But then,
well, yeah, and I imagine, like, I've only played 1 and 2 as well, and I imagine because you pay to open up additional worker spots, I imagine more worker spots become available in a 3 and a 4 player game, and I think that makes some of your decisions more interesting because you can have more to choose from.
Yeah, and you know, so we played last night, and it's funny you mentioned that, because there was like a spot for, I was trying to figure out, I was like, I knew I was doing really well with the research, and there was a spot that gave you like a fear card and another token and a gem, which I needed to move up my research track, or I could just go to somewhere else that just had a gem. And I was like, okay, I think long term this will be better to go here, get the fear card, and get the extra resources. And like, I sat with that decision for quite some time because just with those two spots were open. And it's funny that someone was like, you know, you're probably going to lose the game now because you did that. And I was going to get that at this one point. And it landed up being a tie, and they only won on whatchamacallit, on the tiebreaker. But I think having more things opened up, and once there are more spaces on the board, and once you're kind of, it feels like there's more of a fight for things a little bit, which is nice to see in something that's only got two workers. So that's my thoughts on Lost Ruins of Arnak. What do you think of it, Michelle?
I really like it. I think that what I like about it is the art, for one. Like, it's so evocative. I really, really like the art, the feel of it, but versus Dune Imperium, which did very little for me in terms of the art.
It definitely has art and look and layout. I definitely had a Dune Imperium. I agree with that.
And this one definitely has more of, like if you were to try to put them on, like, a Euro scale. Mm-hmm. Right, this one is more Euro to me. Like, there's not as much interaction. Like, in Dune, it's, you know, you're dealing with that conflict at the end, and deciding how many people to put to that conflict or how many cubes. Whereas this one doesn't have it. But what I really like about Lost Ruins is that combo feel. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you start with a hand of 5 cards, which is typical of a deck builder, but the amount of stuff that you can end up doing with those 5 cards and your 2 people gets pretty big towards the end. And I really like that feeling. Like, you really feel like you're accomplishing a lot with a little. So I really enjoy that aspect of Lost Ruins. Like I said, I I think I would like to try it again at higher player counts so that more worker spots open up, and to see just more of that. But yeah, I quite enjoy the kind of the combo-y nature. Dune feels more like, how much are you going to hold back in order to support the fight? And this one feels like,
that's fair.
How hard can you go and how much can you get out of the little that you have? So I just enjoy that more.
I didn't mention this, but when you buy new cards in this game, they go underneath your deck, which was something I enjoyed because it lets you kind of, you're able to kind of be aware of what's there, which is an interesting way.
And the artifacts trigger right away too when you buy them, which is cool. Depending on what card type you buy, you get different effects. And I feel like there's a lot more deck management in this because
there's
quite a lot of powers throughout the game have trashing cards. And the reason is because of these fear cards that are part of your deck, and they're not very powerful. They're like a boot, and I think they're -1 point.
They're -1, yeah.
Yeah, and you get them through a number of game effects. So you do end up getting them. I think they're pretty much unavoidable. So you end up with these, they're called fear cards in your deck. So you're trying to kind of flush those out. But if you don't have any, and you know, there's the possibility that you do get those trash effects. And I just feel like that allows you to manage your deck a little bit more, which I enjoy. I don't remember Dune Imperium's deck aspect so much. Like, I think that was one of the things I didn't like about Dune is like it's very difficult to trash cards in that game.
Yeah, and this one is there's tons of ways.
Yeah, it's like constant.
So many cards, like you do, which is nice because you really get to kind of manage what you're doing, and then you're like, am I gonna hang? Because the other thing you can do is you can't hang on. A lot of deck builders, you can't hang on to cards. In this one, you can hang on to cards, and then just draw to five, to your standard five. So it really gets you thinking. It's like, okay, there isn't a fear out here. Am I gonna hang on to this card that I have to spend a tablet to trash a card? Am I gonna hang on to it for next turn, but risk not having enough money to buy stuff, but I might be able to get rid of that fear card. I know that fear card is coming. So I like that too. Now you're making me see, the more I'm talking about, the more I'm like, maybe you should go, but I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I think they're both solid games, and I think it just does really come down to like personal preferences of, would you rather have more of like a combo Euro experience or more of an interactive, I mean, I say interactive, like it's not like you're fighting a ton, but I mean, at the end of every round or whatever, right, you do go to a very Euro-style battle, but a battle nonetheless. And it's really about seeing what your opponents are doing and reacting.
Who's got intrigue cards? Yeah.
Huh?
Hey, who has more intrigue cards for the battle? How scared you should be of your opponent.
Exactly. Yeah, which is fun. I think it's a matter of just personal taste there. They're both solid.
Definitely a gooder. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, I just brought this one back to the table. I played it a few times when I got it, and then you know how it goes. And I brought it back to the table this week, and I was like, yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. It's good. I think I would give it a 4 as well.
Cool.
I'm curious to try the other side of the board. I don't know what it adds.
Yeah. And I know they're coming out. I have played Solo as well, but I know they're, I don't think it's out yet. They're coming out with some sort of campaign
for the
solo side as well.
I did print and play, or not print, I haven't played it yet. Yeah, but I did
print it and build it. Everyone complained, I think, how easy it was, right? Or like
there's something wrong
with it, with the solo. So they came out with a print and play, which I downloaded, but I haven't printed it out yet because I need card stock. And then I think there's also a campaign. I think it's going to be free too. I'm not sure, but I think there's a solo campaign coming out as well.
Cool. Yeah. Nice.
Here, there's a new sound effect, y'all. That is future Sean or past Sean or some other kind of Sean jumping in here post recording, because I'm shocked that this is the first time that I've done this or either of us have done this, but I am going to change my rating from a 4, Tis a Gooder, to a 5 on Lost Runes of Arnak, and it gives me the spark. I've had the opportunity to play this game since we recorded this episode a couple weeks ago, a handful of times more in addition to it, the Board Game Arena one. And I absolutely adore it. And I think it actually has now surpassed Dune Imperium. I think they're both fives. They both give me the spark. What I love about this game, as Michelle mentioned in the thing, when she was talking about it, I love just the way the deck building works and how tight everything is. And once you really start getting into combos and you have like 9 or 10 cards, like there's so many games I've just had like 9 or 10 cards in my deck and I'm just cycling through them. And it feels like this cohesive unit you've created with your deck. So therefore, and I apologize for my sound, by the way, because I'm not using my mic. I'm doing this as I'm editing it and just putting it in. But this game definitely, definitely, definitely has the spark for me. It's a 5. Spoiler alert, there's a lot of sparks in this episode. Pew, 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 pew. Pew, pew, pew.
All right, my first pew, pew. Pew, pew. I'm going to start with Maglev Metro because that's harder. And I imagine by the time I get to my second one, I'll be tired.
All right,
so this is Maglev Metro. It came out in 2021, Cult of the New. There you go. 7.4 rating on BGG currently with 213 ratings. This game plays 1 to 4 players in 60 to 90 minutes and has a weight of 2.67. It's designed by Ted Allspeck. The art is by Alana Kelsey and Alan Tim, and it's published by Bezier Games. This is a train game. So you're doing network and route building, and it's pick up and deliver, which not all train games are, I guess. So this is a pick up and deliver game as well. Essentially what you're doing is you are building track so that you can pick up and deliver passengers to different stations that match their color. But the unique thing about this game, and what's pretty cool, I think, is that it mixes with engine building. Because
it's a train game. Boom.
Sure. Yep. There's my explanation. No, your player board is actually has a number of spots for these passengers, and when you drop them off, they actually go onto your player board, but you get to choose where you put them, and where you put them impacts your abilities to do things. So for example, when you start the game, you have one move, but if you put down one of those guys you dropped off onto the slot in move, you now have to move on your turn. So there's, I'm trying to think of the different things on this player board. So you can increase your movement. You can increase how many people you can pick up, how many people you can hold in your train, how many you can drop off. You can change how many track you can build, how much track you can build, which is pretty important too. You can change, you start with the ability to not build stations. So you need that ability because stations are where you drop and pick people up. You refill stations. So when stations get empty, you actually have to use an action to refill that station. So you can increase how many people you put onto the station when you refill it, which is good because, you know, you don't want to be doing one at a time for the whole game. And then there's scoring stuff. So towards the end of the game, you're going to be focusing more on that. So you can increase the value of the people that you've put onto your board. So for example, there are a number of colors. There are robots, which are brass, gold, and silver, or bronze, gold, and silver, I guess. And then there's what are called commuters, and they're in 4 different colors. So this section of the board takes only the colored guys, not the robots, not the gold ones, and you can choose to fill in the rows or the columns, and they increase the value of them at the end of the game. So for example, maybe your I think lilac is one of the colors, so your lilac workers might only be worth 1 point at the end of the game, but if you fill in this column with lilac workers, you now get 2 points per lilac worker. or you can increase the value of your track. So if you create track between two stations, that's worth one VP. But if you fill in this row, it's worth two VP, for example. You also get end game objective cards, which are hidden. And you can only score one at the end of the game. But if you want to score more, you have to fill in your board. So for every row you fill in, you can score another card. There's also, there's the scoring aspect. There's the increasing your the power of your actions. There's also a section where you increase the number of actions you get. So at the beginning of the game, you only start with two actions on a turn. You can increase that all the way up to six. So that's pretty good. And again, you do that by, and it has a requirement. It's not just put four passengers down and you get an extra action. It's like you have to have a gold one and a bronze one and a silver one and that sort of thing. So you need to be able to do these things in the game in order to get more power. And then lastly, at the beginning of the game, everybody has the ability to deliver and pick up these robots, which are the metallic colors, but you'll want to unlock the ability to pick up and drop off those other colors, so the lilacs and I can't even remember, they're like pinks and purples and whatnot, so those are also things you have to fill in. So lots of stuff on your player board, and you're on your turn, you've got your number of actions, you're moving your train around, you're putting down your track, and you're picking up and dropping off these passengers so that you can increase your abilities. The game ends when the bag is empty of people, and when everyone, I think it's one station of each color has been placed. So that's the gist of the game. Some cool aspects of the game are that I don't play a lot of train games, so I'm sure there's some other things I could mention, but your track tiles are transparent, and you can actually lay them on top of each other, and they're all designed in such a way that they won't overlap each other. So it's pretty cool because you can only use your own track, but you can lay track on where other people have put track. So that's a cool aspect of it. The bits are insane. So obviously those transparent tiles are super cool. The board has like double layer, I guess, but the station tiles are very thick, as you can imagine, because you can have up to four transparent tiles stacked going into a station, right? So they're very thick. And then the little trains are adorable.
They're so awesome.
I think they say magnetic, but they're actually hefty. Like they've got a weight to them. They've got like a metallic bottom and then like a almost translucent, but not quite plastic top. And then there's actually a slot to put your passengers in, and they fit in just so, which is great. And so, yeah, so that's, I think, a very, very nice touch and a big draw of the game. So that's the game. Like it's rather straightforward. You're really just deciding how best you want to build up your board and your abilities to meet your objectives and end the game with the most points. The bits I've already talked about. I know one of the complaints with the metallic robots is that the bronze and the gold look very similar, and they certainly do. I didn't have a huge problem. You just kind of tilt your head a little bit in the light and you can tell. But I know that's been a complaint. And it's pretty it can get pretty tight. Like everything fits just so. So it can get like I'm sure at some point some of my tiles will start to peel a little bit, but that hasn't happened yet. So maybe I'll be wrong. There are two different boards that you can play. There's one side which they call kind of more of a casual game, and it's got like a central hub that is easier. You can have multiple tracks coming out of it, so it's easier to kind of get around and plan, and then the other one doesn't have the central hub. I actually haven't played the other one. I've only played the one with the hub a few times, but the other side doesn't have the hub, and I think the way they described it in the rule book was you just need some more forward planning because you can't branch your track. So you have to really think about how you want to build it out, And you can reverse your train when you're moving, but that actually takes an action, which if you have a lot of actions toward the end of the game, not a big deal. But when you have two at the beginning of the game, that is a big deal. So that's kind of nice that you have those two options. The rule book is quite clear, and it's a fairly simple game to learn. What else do I think about it? I like the ramp up. I like that at the beginning you're like doing very little, and then as the game progresses, obviously you have more power. The other cool thing is there's an ability on your player board that you fill in, and then you can actually move things around. So if at the beginning you choose to go, I don't know, heavy on track, but once you've laid all your track, you're like, yeah, I don't need to be able to lay four track every time. Mm-hmm. You can take those robots off and move them elsewhere. So that's kind of cool. Like, it gives you the ability to switch things halfway through. I feel like some of the beginning is probably pretty scripted. Like, if you played this game enough, I imagine to some extent, like, things like moving and building track are going to be important. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but it kind of felt, I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure how many different approaches there are to this game, but it's supposed to be pretty short, so whatever. Some of the drawbacks I could see is, I had mentioned that you refill stations. So I could see like some, if the game is really close, I could see some bad bag draws kind of impacting the game, the end game results. Again, I don't have any necessary proof for this, but it was just something I kind of noticed. I was like, I could see this being an issue. And like, it's a pretty light game, but it says 60 to 90 minutes, which is about what it is. And so there's always that question of like, okay, is this too, like, I don't mind luck impacting end game when the game is 20 minutes, but if it's 60 to 90 minutes, that starts to become an issue. Right. So again, not a huge issue, but just something I kind of, I noticed and thought of. Yeah, it's nice. Like, the turns are really quick. It's pretty simple to grok. It's a neat mix of this route building and pick up and deliver and engine building. Like, I think that's the part of it that I like the most. Yeah, that's about it. It's neat. I like the bits. I don't think the engine building, like, it's neat, but it's, I don't know that it's super interesting. Like, I don't know, but I still like it. I'll give it a 3. I mean, it's okay. Right? That's our 3? Yeah, it's fine.
I mean, it's fine.
Yeah. Neat game. Definitely want to play it a few more times. And I feel like either I'll start to enjoy it more, or I'll just say adios, thanks for the good time. But certainly unique and worth playing if you're just interested in the hobby. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Yeah, it's good. Probably would have loved it more 5 years ago.
And it has nothing to do with Werewolf at all.
Yes, that is quite a big accomplishment for Bezier.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point.
It's like, are werewolves going to, do werewolves pop out of the trains at some point in this game? That's what I was expecting.
No. No werewolves in this game.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, just the werewolf that is at that one state. There is a werewolf station, actually. No, I'm kidding. No, there's not. No werewolves, just in the logo.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alrighty, my next pew 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 is The Quest Kids, which is a game that came out in 2021. Plays 2 to 4 players in 20 to 45 minutes, and has a weight of 1.0. And is for ages 5 and up, which I think you can probably get younger kiddos to play. Well, yeah, I know you definitely can, as I'll talk about in a second. This was designed by Dustin McMillan with art by Apolline Etienne and published by Treasure Falls Games. This is a game that, it's a dungeon crawler. It's a dungeon crawler is kind of the best way to do it. What you're doing in this game is you kind of have all these cards. Well, you're the treasure kids, who are these kids who like going on fantasy adventures. And what you are doing is you are trying to scare away bad guys and going on quests. And when you, and finding gems, actually, is the other thing. When you are doing these things, you get stars, which is what's going to determine who wins the game. So whoever has the most stars wins. And you can also get, there are also treasure tokens that you can find, which usually give you victory points, but they can also be like some sort of gelatinous blob, I think, and give you negative victory points as well. But what you are doing in this game is you flip over all these square tiles on the board face down, and there are going to be two kinds. There's going to be two-thirds of the board-ish are going to be gray and green tiles, and then the rest of the board are going to be red tiles. For the most part, I think all the green cards, I might be getting this wrong, but I think all the green cards just have resources on it. So there are three different types of resources or cards that you can draw in the game. There are wisdom, power, and magic. So yellow, purplish, and red. Those are the three different kinds. And most of these cards will give you these resources or loot to put in your hand. And this is what you're going to use to try and fight off bad guys. The gray cards are either going to be some form of loot or bad guys that you have to try and scare off. In order to scare off them, you'll need a number of, like, there might be one guy where you might need one magic and one power, and you scare them off. And if you scare them off, you put them in your stack of cards that you've got, and then all the bad guys will have a number of stars on them, I think going from one or two to five. These are victory points at the end. Some of the other cards on the board, there are also cards, mostly resource, all resource cards that will also give you, some of them might give you a token. So you go into a bag, you pull out a token, and again, that's going to give you points. Depending what color you are or what character you are, you might get more victory points or a standard amount, or you could get one of the negative ones, which give you negative victory points. The game is over when every tile on the board is explored. There are some walls and some things, some ways to go. But for the most part, as long as there's a clear path of explored areas, you can go kind of wherever you want on the board, as long as you're going through a door and there's another tile adjacent to it. If you can't scare away a bad guy, if you run into a bad guy and you can't scare him away, you lose a heart. I think you have three hearts. You lose a heart. You eventually get potentially knocked out if you can't do it. And then you kind of respawn again after that, because this is a kid's game after, and you don't actually get killed, you just get knocked out. There are also quest cards that everyone starts with, which also give you victory points, that you have to do a certain thing, like scare away two bad guys, or whatever, you know, have X types of resource cards in your hands. And there are also, what I really like about this, and I've talked about this type of thing a lot in things like No Thank You Evil, that I really like games where you can help each other. And in this game, it's kind of semi-cooperative, even though we hate semi-cooperative games. It's semi-cooperative in that you can always help your friend. And if you help them, so you might help them by, if they're fighting a bad guy and they don't have enough of one type of resource, you can give them to them. And you get something called a kind card, which, because you're being kind to your friend, you will get a resource or victory points or something, depending on what you draw. So I really like that as well. In terms of bits, it's pretty nice. It's a really high quality for what's essentially a kid's game. It's got four nice minis on them. The minis are, I will be honest, my daughter broke off a head and a sword on one of them already. But they can be super glued. So the minis are good. While they're really big, the quality on the minis is not, but again, for a game for five-year-olds, you're not really expecting a ton, I guess. And she is kind of rough with her stuff. I will say two things before I give a score of this game. One, my daughter absolutely loved this game so much, like to the point that she would wake up at 6:30 in the morning, set it up herself, and just wait for me to get up to play, which means I was not in a good mood, and we still had a blast. She taught mom how to play this. She taught her grandmother how to play it over Zoom. That's how much she loved it. And it was adorable, an absolute adorable thing. Now, if you are looking at this game, this was a Kickstarter. If you're looking at this game as just a game, my rating would not be as high as it is with there's an expansion that was in the Kickstarter that makes it into a campaign game, a relatively short campaign game, but it adds that much more to it. And it's got the campaign games that's something Tolk-wise. Tolk is, it's his cave or whatever. So the campaign game, though, is like what you are doing. There's kind of an end goal that you're trying to help Tolk with. And during their, I think, 5 or 6 different campaigns for it. And what you are doing during the campaigns is the story is progressing. You're reading out a couple of cards each turn. It might add a rule or a character. There are a couple of envelopes in it. It's not like Zombie Kids where there are millions of envelopes. There are 2 or 3 envelopes that add different things to the game, which I won't spoil. But again, this really adds a ton to the game, at least for that, you know, 5 or 6 times that you're playing it. She had a blast. She would play it with me. We would play it. Then she would go play it with, she would reset everything and then go play it with mom and then try and tell mom the story on the cards because she can't read the cards. But then mom would have to read the cards. It was very adorable, very cute. And then at the end, you can kind of mix in some of the cards into the most of the stuff from the expansion into the base game, which is really nice. Based on that, I'm going to give it a 5. It gives me the spark. As we've talked about before on some things on the show, such as the kitten game last time, results are different based on how others feel. However, I think this is really neat. You know, I talk about these, we talk about these games like with Stone Soup and Color It and, you know, the snail game, the Hobbit game, that I really like these games that kind of introduce something to it. And this kind of introduces a dungeon crawl, or better, you know, you can totally use this as just a cooperative game to introduce, even though it's a semi, it's not really a cooperative game. I mean, it could just be like, we're just going to explore the dungeon. We're going to work together to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So I like these games that just introduce something. I think, you know, very specific. I think at some point very soon, she might just move on for him because she got all of it. But hey, maybe I want to try and get her to play Dungeon Throne Adventure with me. At some point in the year. So hey, we're gonna start with the quest kits. So just for that, just based on the amount of fun and the amount of padding it has done to my BG stats, because we've probably played it like 15 times now over the last couple of weeks, I'm gonna give it a 5 and I'll give it the spark. And I think if you're looking for that kind of introduction, is a good game. It is a table hog, so it makes it really, it's kind of like, for me it was kind of rough because we always have to play it on the floor and my knees and back and ankles hurt because it's way too big for a table. It's a pretty big game for a kid's game, but it's a really good package and she's enjoyed it, which is really cool, and my wife has played it with her, which is really neat. And always happy to just find kind of new games that really introduce like mechanisms, because I do hope one day, you know, she will be more of a gamer and will want to play other games with me. So this will introduce things to her. And same thing, like right now we're obviously not doing it, but this is a game I could totally see working with school with Board Game Club as well once we get that going again, because it really introduces those things. So
nice, good stuff. And it just came out. Sorry, I just realized.
Yeah, it just delivered from Kickstarter. And nice. It definitely feels like a Kickstarter. Like
Last Pew Pew? Last Pew Pew. Wow. All right. This is Micro Macro Crime City. This came out in 2020. Has a current rating of 8 with 1,500 ratings. Plays 1 to 4 in 15 to 45 minutes and has a weight of 1.11.
Much heavier than the quest kits.
No, and I do play this with my daughter. I just say that I don't it's use not death. I'm like, oh, look, he fell asleep in his backyard. It's designed by Johan Sieck. No, I don't know. Art by Daniel Goll, Tobias Johink, and Johannes Sieck. Oh, no, I'm so sorry. And is published by Pegasus Spiel. As well as Spielweiss, Do you know? Spielweiss? Spielweiss?
Yeah, no, Spielweiss is what I would guess.
Spielweiss. So, so this is more of an activity than it is a game. But it's cool. It's a very, very large city map that is all in black and white and is illustrated with houses and characters of all sorts and more, I guess, buildings and stuff too, right? Obviously, it's a city. But the illustrations are not a snapshot in time. So what I mean by that is, let's say Sean was in this game. If Sean went to the flower shop, I could see him in the flower shop.
Well, I love flower shops.
But if he came to the flower shop from the coffee shop, I would also see him in the coffee shop. And I would be able to, and then maybe I would see him walking down the block between those two shops. And I would say, Sean went from the coffee shop, walked down the block, and went to the flower shop. So what you're trying to do is solve mysteries. I don't know how many come in this game. Quite a few. I'd say probably about 10. And they have different difficulty ratings, 1 to 5 star. And you're just simply asked a question. So find this person, and you'll say, okay, I found this person. And then I'll say, okay, well, what do you think happened? And you're basically just looking for clues, following scenarios that you think happened to eventually solve this case. That's it. Comes with a little magnifying glass that you can use to see, because it's, you know, some of the details can be quite small. Yeah, that's pretty much it. And I really enjoy this. Like I said, it's less of a game and more of an activity. It's something that we've had out on the table over this weekend, and it's just like, you know, let's do a case and just work through it. And I wasn't sure about this one because I thought this is either going to be really frustrating or really fun. Like, I felt like it could go either way. Frustrating because it could be one of those things where the questions were too vague and you didn't really know what you were looking for, and there's so much to see and you're like, I don't know, you know, and then it's just frustrating. I was worried it was that. It is not that, at least not what we've experienced so far. So we haven't gotten into the 4 and 5 star cases, which possibly might feel a bit more frustrating. I'm not sure. But the 1, the 2, and the 3 stars, they're fairly straightforward. You'll figure it out. If you sit and look, you'll figure it out, which is nice. It's not super obvious. It's not too easy, but it's not so hard and so vague that, yeah, you're going to get frustrated or just give up or look on the BGG for some spoilers. So yeah, that's it really. The art's cute. The stories are good. I'm playing it with my daughter. She doesn't really understand what's going on, but sometimes you know specifically what you're looking for, or you'll be following a car and the car has markings so she can kind of look. And I've changed some of the story. Like, I don't tell her, oh, this guy's been murdered. You know, I say, oh, he fell asleep. What happened? But yeah, you can play with pretty much anybody. It's a little bit difficult. Like, it says 1 to 4 players. And even like with me and my husband, it's kind of annoying. Like, it's a big map, but it's hard to share the space. So like, you could really play with a lot of people, but the details are pretty small, so you do really need to like kind of get in there. So yeah, just be aware of that. But yeah, that's it really. It's a really fun experience. It's very different. I'm giving it a 4. Tis a gooder. Again, don't really see it necessarily as a game. It's more of a game type activity, but a really unique one. And yeah, one I would definitely recommend. It's fun. It's good. Cool. And there's enough in there like for what you get.
Nice. So. I have this hanging out to play. I need to play it. I want to play it. But yeah.
I thought it was good marketing in that there. The box art has part of the city, and then you can actually solve a crime on the box. So it kind of gives you, or it doesn't kind of, it does give you a sense of what the game is like. So that was really smart. So yeah, that's my micro macro. I would recommend.
Cool.
Yeah, it is. Thanks.
You're welcome, man. All right.
You have the voice of an angel.
Thank you. This is our BGG Thread Spotlight, where we use other people's comments on the BGG Thread to make content for our show.
Whoop, whoop. So this one is Modern Board Game Expectations. Lee Baber, the original poster, said, "Something I've noticed since getting into the hobby a few years back is how people's expectations of board games have changed over the years, especially in regards to production quality, design, and support. I'll start with the box and insert. This is something I've noticed has become a big thing over recent years and has definitely become a bit of an expectation for modern game, which people didn't seem to even notice when I was a kid." Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Die Stacker said, I want the best games to be equivalent to collector's editions of acclaimed books, taking the quality of every aspect seriously, thematic, subject, mechanical game, and production quality. They should look great on the shelf and on the table, and playing them should be an experience to savor at the time and reflect on later."
I definitely feel like that is a good representation of the general expectation of games now, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'll get to this at the end.
Okay. James Clark says, the main change I've noticed is the attitude towards games as possessions. In the past, our games were generally regarded as informal amusements which were to be played with. Over the last 15 years or so, there seems to have been a large swing towards games being regarded as precious items, deserving of special treatment and protection." I'm curious. I definitely see that that's a thing. Like, I mean, yeah, we have huge collections and with all the deluxe editions, and there's some very expensive games. That certainly happened. I'm wondering if it's just more obvious now.
Yeah.
Or like, because I mean, there are people who had like massive collections of a bunch of games you and I know nothing about from like the 80s. I know there were less games, but I think there were still like collectors out there. Just maybe not as many? I don't know. What do you think?
I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure what he gets at with that one. Like, is it like, I'm just stuck on the special treatment and protection? Is he like just talking about sleeving and like, you know, stuff like that? But I think part of that too is just how expensive, you know, games are. It's like, yeah, geez, if you're going to spend $200 on a game, or $300 on a game, or $100 on a game, or whatever, no matter how much you spend, really, I mean, it's a possession, and it's something that, I don't know, like, to me, if you're going to spend that much on a game, it's a lot more. It's like, you know, some games are the price of the PS4 or PS5 now, I guess, or a Switch or whatever, or a TV,
That's it. Maybe just back in the day, there weren't super expensive copies of games. Like, most of the games were, I don't know, $20-$30. And
yeah, and I think back in the day, if you ended up spending a ton on a game, it'd be like, oh, well, I have to mail order, you know, before the internet and before all these sorts of things, you know, I had to mail order it and get it from somewhere, or import it from Germany, or, you know, so there was all the game was cheap, but there was this extra cost to actually get it to you, whereas now it's just, you can get these super high priced games and these expensive games anywhere, and it's like,
It makes sense, though. For sure.
Lee Baber, the OP, quality components seem to be a big expectation. I feel replayability and quantity of gameplay variation is definitely another one, which is odd when you think about how big the average gamer's collection is. The average gamer seems to have more games than ever on their shelves, yet people want more content from them. I always find that hilarious.
Yeah, I do too.
Is that like, oh my God, I have a million games and I'm only going to play them once or twice, but it's got to have infinite replayability for all the times I'm never, ever going to play it.
I know, it's just so bizarre. And I mean, I fall into it too, right? But yeah, it's pretty hilarious. All right. Michael Lowry says production values have certainly gone up in recent years. In general, that's a good thing. It has simply become much easier to design and produce better looking and more functional rule books and game pieces. That said, there certainly are cases now of form over function. Tapestry, I'm looking at you. Games at higher points, which feature some really pretty bits that aren't used much and or are of questionable functionality. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I mean, it's what sells. I mean, Kickstarter definitely has shown that that's the kind of stuff that sells. Like you were just saying with that, the Quest Kids.
Yep.
Right? And it's, I mean, that's what people want. They're toys.
I won't talk about this episode, but I'm going to be talking about something similar later. Marvel United is a big game that just kind of shipped for Kickstarter and has gotten a lot of play at our house recently. But really, essentially, it's very much just a card game, right? With a bunch of chibi superhero minis with it. That is a game you're paying 100% for the minis because you're getting just a basic card game with it.
But so would you rather have the card game and have it be a significant percentage, we'll say, cheaper? Or would you rather pay more and have the bits?
Oh, definitely the bits for this one, because the minis are fantastic and amazing.
All right, there you go.
I'm horrible. Yeah.
No, you're not.
I'm like the average gamer.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason they're in the box, right? I'm similar. Like, I have a cutoff point, you know, like, if I'm looking at a game and I know, say, it's $50 at retail and the Kickstarter version is $100 and you get minis and some custom coins, I'm like, yeah, okay, that's not worth it. But if you're asking me to spend another $10 or $15 to get some extra stuff that makes the gameplay more, in my opinion, more fun because there's, I don't know, bits to play with, then I'm in.
Yep. Darren M. says, I'm of the firm belief that game quality in terms of gameplay is increasing over time as well.
Yes, I would agree with that.
I would say so.
Yes.
But I think it's also pointing out those games that, because there are so many games now, it's starting to point out the older ones, just how good they are as well. You know, it kind of goes the other way too. Quality gameplay is... We're seeing a lot more, but we also are seeing so many other games. So it's making games that, you know.
That's true. There's a dilution.
That came out a while. But it's good because it kind of, you can go back and you can see, oh, this game was actually is so good compared to right now. So
yeah. But there are also a lot of, this game just hasn't aged well, right? Where you play it and you're like, this is showing its age. Yeah. So, yeah, I think I know this conversation came up because a few people brought that up as well. And yeah, I think it's not that there weren't good games in the past. It's just, you know, gameplay continues to improve, I think, and maybe innovate as well. And there's just more good games because there's more games. There's also more bad games, though.
Yeah.
Evelyn Ramiel says, I really hope for board games that use minimal plastic, don't take up more space than they need to, and have components that last a really long time. I do think it should be expected that games get better at conserving resources and costing less fuel to ship. I thought this one was interesting because this is definitely not a trend we're seeing in the hobby right now.
Evelyn is looking at things from... the point that it would be nice if we all looked at things, but we don't.
And I'm curious if the hobby will get there at some point, because it definitely seems like society as a whole is becoming more conscious and aware of being good to our earth.
I don't think that will ever happen, as long as, not to blame everything on Kickstarter, but as long as we have Kickstarter, I feel like Kickstarter board gaming continues to grow and continues to have to get more and more expensive.
But I could see maybe boxes being made with like more eco-friendly materials, like that becoming a thing. Although you don't throw out your boxes, so expansion boxes maybe.
I'd be so happy if games just came in. You know, but stuff like that's more expensive, like boxes that were made of recycled you know, cardboard or paper. I'd be totally fine with that. You can print high quality. I have a bunch of t-shirts that were made from plastic bottles that were recycled plastic bottles. And those are my t-shirts. You know, I think it's possible. I feel like as long as you have to, I'm sorry, I'm blaming it on Kickstarter again. As long as you have to ship these giant boxes that show up like Marvel United and like Bloodborne. Mm-hmm.
And boxes are definitely trending towards the bigger
end
of things right now.
There was a game, and I can't remember for the life of me, and maybe you saw it as well, Michelle, that part of their whole spiel, it was definitely after the pandemic, and I think it was on Kickstarter, where it was made specifically, all the materials were made out of recycled components, and I can't remember. Mm,
I didn't see that.
I saw that there were advertisements on like BGG, and I saw the guy posting on various Facebook groups about it. Now I'm going to try and find it. Mm. But
Even components, like for sure, deluxified components are a trend that the hobby has embraced. Yeah. And a lot of it's plastic, right? Like a lot of the minis and stuff, and even like the little resource bits are plastic. So I'm curious to see if the hobby ends up becoming a bit more eco-friendly.
And I think for that to happen, it has to be more of like a, you know, the type of thing where, oh, the government or, you know, whatever is giving small businesses X amount of bursaries and stuff to be able to do this, to go this way, because I think it will always be cheaper, you know, and for the most part, yes, we talk about things like CBON and a very small fragments of that doesn't have anything to do with Asmodee Day, of board game companies are tiny, right? Their margins are so thin, and I totally understand that for them to be so friendly, which is more expensive, right? Than doing this. I understand why, and I would never hold it against them. So I think it's got to be something where it's got to come from the top levels, like from the government, where, hey, you know, we want this, like they've done with like car companies and other, you know, and you get your rebates if you have low energy or energy efficient appliances and stuff, right?
Yeah. I was going to say, I have seen pressures put on publishers, like through social media, for certain things like diversity and inclusion in art, which certainly the pressures come from the consumer, and there's been changes in the industry, but having a diverse and inclusive art, or having diverse and inclusive art, does not impact your budget or your production. Yeah. It's just it's a consideration. Whereas, like you said, like, yeah, the on the production side of things, it's bigger. Yeah.
But hopefully, as a society, we'll get that's a good
plan. I think we will eventually. I have a hard time believing we won't. And I'm curious to see what that looks like.
Hey, Michelle.
What?
Where have you been in 2020? we've gone through 2020. I hope so.
What do you mean?
No, I have little faith in the world anymore.
Oh, I see.
For anything.
I understand.
So hopefully, yes. I hope so too. I'm gonna be positive. All right, Greg, last one here. To me, modern gaming has moved to focus on acquisition. They are designed to have eye candy, so you have immediate interest, and then games are designed to be enjoyable on the first play as the primary goal. They do this by baking the strategies right into the board and removing the interaction that could potentially sour the first play. The negative side of this is that many new games have become pretty solitaire affairs and do not really have replayability beyond the first few games of rule internalization and exploring the couple of strategies that the designer laid out. I would argue they also start to feel the same.
I had to end with this one. It was like, whoa.
A lot to unbake in Greg's thing. And I think he has some good points. He's just got too many of them.
I agree. Go ahead. Sorry.
I agree that gaming has focused on acquisition. I feel like amongst hardcore gamers, I really do feel like it's more of a collection hobby than it is a play hobby. Mm-hmm. Amongst hardcore gamers, though, again, that we like to think of ourselves as a big part of the gaming and even hobby gaming population. But I think the majority of people who are hobby gamers probably have 20, 30, 10 games, right? They're the ones who have that I consider have played Catan 10 million times and they love it. And mm-hmm. they play a few other games, right? But I think a lot of kind of modern gaming is focused on people like us, you and I, and the people listening to this show who like to try all these games, want to try them once, and then like probably buy them because they like them, right? And want to try them. And it's that collection. And I feel we as gamers have that mentality. I shouldn't speak for you or other people. I know myself, you know.
Well, I think it's a well-known
thing,
whether, in the hobby, right? Like
comic books or graphic novels or friggin' pop figures that I have everywhere that I don't keep out anymore. There's like always stuff that I did before Magic, right? For me, Magic was the big thing way back when. It was like, if it wasn't board games, it'd probably be something else. So,
yeah. Yeah, not for me. I guess I had a lot of books.
Yeah. And books,
I wasn't much of a collector of things, but I definitely, like, with the board game hobby, definitely acquisition is a big thing. And I mean, I've talked about like exploring the games and eye candy. Yeah, absolutely. That's what gets me in, immediate interest. And, you know, I play it a few times, enjoy it. There's many games I keep and play more than a few times, but a lot of games I'm happy with that. Like I'm happy to try it, play it, see the ideas, enjoy the art, and then move on. And I mean, I'm saying that with the recognition that I still have a very large collection. I'd be curious to talk to designers about that. Like if there's a pressure from publishers to really make that first play very, very enjoyable. We have seen some games where they've tried to approach with very little rules overhead, right? Like,
I love that. I think that's great. Well, I really like the whole, you know, like as you, the more you play the game, the more rules open. I think Freedom of Freeze was one of like the first ones who started doing that with a bunch of his games, right? Where like you start with a very light rule and the more rule set, and the more you play the game, the more rules open up until you get everything. I think that's great. That's a great thing for bringing new people into our hobby.
I agree. I think it makes sense and I think it works. I'm curious to know what the pressures are, you know, and what sells and whatnot. I don't know. Like he talks about that becoming, you know, games have become pretty solitaire affairs because we've removed the interaction. I don't know if that's so much around immediate interest in people just wanting to move on or just player preference.
I think it's, I view that. I've always viewed that, you know, as much as I rag on Euros and stuff, I've always just viewed that as, you know, player preference as opposed to games just moving towards being solitaire, because there, I mean, we talked about like with Lost Ruins of Arnak and Dune Imperium, right? It's like you have something that's more kind of the solitaire in Lost Ruins of Arnak, but it's still a great game, and mm-hmm. Dune, which is more of, you know, and I think both those games probably have a fair bit of replayability in them, just in terms of different strategies and things. So I view that personally more as a player preference sort of thing.
And there does seem to be more of a trend, like in terms of Euros anyways, there does seem to be more of a trend right now towards more complicated rule sets. Mm-hmm. And like a mix of mechanisms. So like when people talk about a classic Euro, they're really talking about, in my opinion, okay, I'm not an expert here. They're really talking about
the Dice Tower Network. You are an expert, my friend.
They're really talking about, you know, fairly simple, straightforward rule set where the game does come out through the interaction between players. Like, it seems to me like that's a common definition used for like a classic Euro, and we're kind of going away from that. So yeah, I don't know. Us moving away from that means that it's not necessarily an easy entry. Right. But, I think that like Euros nowadays are definitely not easier for people to get into. I would say if anything, they're harder, but maybe more of our like gateway games are simpler. I don't know. But I would say Euros don't fall into that category right now because I feel like they're more complicated than anything.
Yep.
Anyway. Cool. Any other trends? We've mentioned a few, but...
Bigger boxes. I think these have all talked of the ones that I see. I think it's the bigger boxes, the kind of having to have everything. I mean, that's one I
get. Completionists.
I've had times where I've tried to sell a game and I'm like, it doesn't have a random promo that comes with it. And the person is like, no, thank you. Forget it. I have to have everything. I'm like, okay. But I think, yeah, kind of like people having to have everything. Again, I blame Kickstarter. Having to have everything. But that's a big one.
And I do think, like, in terms of art, I think that there's definitely a higher expectation now. Like, I look at Carpe Diem, which I know I've dragged through the mud many times. But, I mean, it did get a second edition with new and upgraded art because it was not, in my opinion, and clearly many other people's opinions, it was not up to snuff with today's standards. I think that's a huge one.
I agree. Yeah. The one I would like to see that still drives me nuts is rule books. Like, I wish that.
Yeah.
I have my own personal expectations, which apparently most other people in the board game hobby or industry do not have, is that rule books, A, have no typos, and B, are coherent, and C, actually, you can actually teach the game. And, I feel like, that's the thing that drives me nuts about board games. And I think that should be an expectation. You're paying a lot of money you're paying money for these games, for this product. And it's like the rule book is great as Rodney Smith is at teaching us games, or Paul Grogan, as great as both of them are at teaching us games, and they are, and they're amazing. They're not coming in that box.
Yeah. Totally.
We don't get our own personal Rodney Smith in the box. I wish we did, but we don't. We get a rule book, and the rule book should be high quality, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's been enough written that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You figure that out.
I'd like that to be an expectation.
Yeah, and player aids. Come on, people.
Yeah, or else Michelle will just make them and put them on BGG.
Rich laughed at me today. He was like, this is my imitation of you. And he pretended to open a box, set up the game, sat down on the couch, read a rule book, went to the computer and made an aid. And I was like, oh my God, so much work. But yeah, it's pretty accurate.
The Lost Rooms of Arnak has a good player aid. I like the player aid. And it's super helpful.
Bubble. For sure.
Anyway, all right. You're ready to play some baseball?
Oh yeah. Next up. Boop. This is our next up bit, wherein we hype up the hype and discuss games we cannot wait to fondle. Sean, you go first.
Speaking of fondling, I'm gonna get through mine really quickly because you obviously will not care about this at all, but that's okay. I mentioned before Marvel United, and I'll probably talk about it on our next episode. Our spoiler alert: it's gonna have 10 million sparks, butt buses after. But because this was a Kickstarter game and it just delivered after a little bit over a year, it's actually pretty fast. As of this recording, probably today, launched Marvel United X-Men, the X-Men version of it, from CMON, which will be on Kickstarter, and everyone will be going gaga over it with the awesome, cute little chibi miniatures. You know what? I was like that. That was my reaction, Michelle, when this first launched, this game. I was like, why is chibi miniatures? What do I care about them?
Oh, what do I care?
I did not back the game. And then a few friends of mine got it. And I was like, we're in this Discord chat. And they kept posting pictures of it. And I was like, and then they actually played the game. And they loved the game. And I was reading the reviews. And unfortunately, we are proud members of the Dice Tower Network, Michelle. And I don't know if you've been seeing all the Dice Towers coverage now is just on Marvel United.
No, I haven't noticed.
Todd Vassell has like 10 million Marvel United books. Obviously, he loves it. And everyone gave it like a 9 or a 10 or whatever on the Dice Tower. Everyone loves it. The miniatures are amazing. Like, they bring out the detail, which is shocking, but because they're the chibi miniatures, they bring out the detail in the characters. Amazing. There are no X-Men in it because obviously they were planning to hoodwink a lot more money out of us with Marvel United X-Men. So I'm looking so forward to that. I'm going to see what the game is actually like because I know the main thing it's actually doing is a one versus many, which I hate. Ugh. And I actually don't like that. So I'm going to see if it's something where I could just get, and I'm assuming I will be able to just get the characters, like, and the one versus many is a mode, then I will be happy with it. So we'll see. Today.
So they are, today. So only the X-Men has the chibi ones, or there were chibis other ones?
So Marvel United, which was the one that just dropped, that one is, it's all chibis, but there are actually, I don't think there are any, like, legit X-Men characters in it.
Okay.
Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, who are X-Men characters, but they're also Avengers characters, but whatever. We won't get into that right now. And then this expansion is going to be all about the, and it really has, for those of you kids of the 90s / comic book fans of the 90s who watched the X-Men animated series, it seems like that's the color palette and that's the look they're going for, which is awesome because I love that show.
Cool.
United or Marvel United.
I had to color an Iron Man for my daughter. She's going to a birthday party, like at day home.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid likes Iron Man. And there were like 100 different Iron Man suits, all with different colors. Like, okay, I get it, orange and or red and gold.
Yeah.
But we were like trying to figure out the details, and every suit was different.
Well, you see, Michelle, it depends if you're like the Mach 3 or the Mach 5. Or Hulkbuster, Iron Man.
Oh, yeah. Just pick a lane.
Like, it's, you know, it really depends what you're going for. So.
Well, I just said make it up, and she was not okay with that. So, all right. Well, my next up is Almanac: The Dragon Road, which is already out. It came out in 2020. It's designed by Scott Ulms and published by Colossal Games. It currently has a 7.6 rating. And the reason I'm interested in this is that it is a worker placement game. Worker placement. It says pick up and deliver. Don't know so much about what that's about. But it's a worker placement game in a spiral bound book.
Mm.
And so the way it works, apparently, so there's like worker spots. And then when you get to the end of a page, there's like a bit of a choose your own adventure. And the it'll kind of say like, okay, if you go to this page, you know, this type of resource will be available. But if you go to this page, and then you blind bid to get the ability to choose which page you go to. And then I don't know how the game ends.
Well, that's neat.
I know. And then every page has slightly different rules, like nothing crazy. It didn't look like, I know that was one of the complaints or hesitancies by a lot of people, but it looks like it's pretty straightforward. Like one of them might have a river down the middle and you can only place on one side of the river, or there'll be like scaffolding and you have to like place above one, like you have to start at the bottom, move up or something. Like, I don't know, like little things like that. Mm-hmm. I don't think the game's going to be like exceptional. The weight's two. So I think it's like pretty light and fun and whatever. But I just love the idea. The art's super cute too. Just really, really love the idea. So I'm really excited to try it out. It's on its way. I think I'm going to get it this week. So yeah, just a really cool idea. I didn't hear much about this.
No, I didn't hear anything about this.
Yeah, but it looks neat.
Neat.
Yeah. So that's Almanac: The Dragon Road. Radar. I will definitely review it on an upcoming episode and let you guys know what I think.
Cool.
Or let you all know.
Y'all.
All right. Well, there you go. We did it. We did another thing.
We did.
Yep. That's episode 76. Mm-hmm. Before we close out the show, we want to say thanks again to all of you, our amazing listeners, and our show sponsor, Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. And don't forget to use the coupon code ATB-TAKE5OFF100 to take $5 off your order over $100. One use per customer, no other rules apply. The next time you are playing with someone who has AP, may we suggest you use that time to click the subscribe button and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Thanks again. Bye.
Bye.